Hello, and welcome to the Influence Change at Work show. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, founder and change facilitator at Enclaria, where you can accelerate your influence and overcome obstacles to change so you can make a bigger impact in your workplace. Today, my guest is Jen Kelchner, who is here to share how open organizations facilitate change. Jen is an architect and shepherd of change cycles. She founded the Leader 21 Change Agency to co-create building an open, collaborative, inclusive world with global organizations. Jen co-creates on future models, roadmaps, and solutions, provides thought leadership and strategic insights, and breaks down barriers to innovation on the people side of digital transformation. She does this as an international speaker, writer, facilitator, advisor, coach, and PMO leader of change initiatives for social innovators, nonprofits, healthcare, public sector, and tech organizations. Jen is also a founding member of the Forbes Coaches Council, Deloitte alumni, and member of the Open Organization Ambassador Team. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That was quite the mouthful.
Yeah. You do a lot of stuff, but all focused on this idea of open organizations, you know? And so I'm curious, and I just would love to learn more about this. So just start with the basics. Just what is an open organization?
Absolutely. So I think we probably, across the board in companies, use very similar words to describe the same things, and we'll kind of get into some of the differences. So you may be more familiar with the word agile. You might hear agile HR or an agile organization, and agile organizations and open organizations are really pretty similar. There's a few core differences. And the difference would be that the open organization, which was a model that came about through Red Hat, and some of you may be familiar with them. They've been in the news a lot this year since they were acquired by IBM for their culture, because they really kind of fostered a different way of doing organizational models, not just the leadership, but how we kind of organize for work in general, based out of how they were designing software in the open source community. And so kind of as a foreleader in that, they've really coined the thing around the quote unquote open organization. And through the community efforts, like the ambassador group that I'm part on, the difference is really focused on five core principles. And that becomes the foundation for everything that really helps an organization become open. And those five principles are transparency, adaptability, community, collaboration, and inclusivity. And they look different operationalized versus when you're talking about how do you use those values and principles to say, for an organization to design software or design a service that they offer. Because on the people side, obviously within culture, which is definitely something we're talking about today, those things look different, right? Like the actions and the behaviors are a little different than you would find from a process standpoint. But the thing that I love about open organizations is they come in all shapes and sizes. They're kind of each one of those values you can imagine with levers. So you might have to dial one of those up and dial one of them down based on your industry or just really what suits your needs. But the core thing about openness is that all five are present at the same time. They really rely on each other to work properly.
Okay. So you can't just use one and expect that you'll have a more open organization.
Yeah, I think the thing I like to really talk a lot with people, like to understand is, and so our ambassador group, for example, has been having a conversation for like the last year, because, you know, I'll keep throwing trust back in the mix. Well, what about trust? Like, right? Like we need psychologically safe workspace. We need to learn how to establish trust with our coworkers, with our teams, with our clients. Like, how do we do that? And so we've had this conversation, is trust actually like a sixth principle that we could throw in the mix? And we have a little bit of, it depends who you ask. But a lot of us are saying, but if we have all five present and we're doing them appropriately, even if they're a levers up or a lever down somewhere, if you're doing that, then you really are creating a space for trust to exist. There's a lot of open organizations have to be more highly emotionally intelligent. It just requires a higher EQ to kind of operate in that space. And then because of that, you're automatically assuming positive intent. And then the next step is really creating, lowering that toxicity level in a workspace and then creating a place for people to really base strong relationships and have trust and learn how to do that throughout an ecosystem, meaning your vendors, your clients, your colleagues across the globe. Because I think everything kind of goes back to fear. So if we're having a misstep somewhere in our relationships, which doesn't matter whether that's in a workplace or outside of the workplace, but that kind of quote unquote fear place comes into play if we don't understand how all of these things work together. Like, what is my place in the system? How do I work with other people? And I think for me, I find a lot with leaders, the biggest trigger tends to be the word transparency. And that's where I find there tends to be a problem. We start talking about trust.
Yeah, like, wait a minute, we can't share everything.
Right. And that's actually the first pushback. Like when you talk with a company that's like, whoa, you want us to be open? Well, that word transparent, maybe you don't understand how healthcare works or understand, we have federal regulations. And I think what I really want people to understand is, look, these are core human behaviors and needs. You just have to understand what that means for you and your organization. So transparency really is, obviously we talk about leadership. That's going to look more like a little bit of that authenticity piece, but it's sharing wins and failures. So if something doesn't go well, we need to talk about what didn't go well without there being a fear of some sort of retribution or a fear of, what will my team think of me if I come out and said, I know I championed this thing, but it totally fell apart and that's on me. But we need to do that. There's a human thing to that. But if you look at transparency organizationally, it's really just access to information. Are we removing barriers and silos in our communication and our feedback loops? Are we allowing people to get what they need when they need it and which helping them do their jobs more effectively and efficiently, just as an example?
Okay. Well, let's dive into each of these five principles a little bit, and maybe you can provide some examples of what it might look like for each of those to be present.
Absolutely. So I think it's probably important to know as we head into that, this openness, if you will, is really helps companies and an individual really get a competitive edge. And I'm going to use that term lightly because I'm not one that really champions the, I think the phrase competitive edge kind of has this tone to it, like we have to crawl over each other to get somewhere else. And that's the one thing about openness is it's so focused on community that it really is about everybody is part of it. It's very, it's a meritocracy. Everybody has a voice, and there's systems in place for people to be heard. But competitive edge, if we think about in a marketplace. So if your organization has to think about its business model or its services, we talk about competitive edge in terms of your sustainability. Are you optimized and sustainable? Are you going to be able to, offer the same service in 12 months from now? Is it even going to be relevant or what else needs to be in place, right? So that's really, I just wanted to explain that that's really what I mean when I say competitive edge. Anymore, I like to think about that as thriving, which is really, really critical for most organizations to think about. But when we look at these principles and what they look like and how they fit together, it really does create a space for anybody within this ecosystem. So if you're looking at an individual level, at a team department level, globally across an enterprise, it allows that individual to become not just a continuous learner, but to really be in that continuous cycle of change without that fear that crops up with uncertainty, if that makes sense. So I think so many of us, when we talk about change, man, it's just like, but what's that mean? And where do I fit? but when the processes are in place for all of this to work and the framework is there, people like that sensitivity kind of comes down a notch and you don't feel like, every time a decision's rolled out or every time you read a communication, you're feeling a bit triggered, like, what now? And which is really the world we live in because we're in that constant state of change. So when we look at, let's go back to inclusivity. We'll start with inclusivity. that means a lot of words to us, a lot of different definitions for us, especially those of us that deal on the people side of it, right? I think our first go-to is we think diversity, inclusion. What does that mean? Inclusion in the sense of an open organization does literally, on the people side, look at, you know, how are we sourcing talent? It goes beyond, are we really being inclusive and welcoming everyone here, no matter where they come from, no matter who they are, how they feel about themselves, where, how they identify, all of those pieces. It's just the core sense of a human is accepted here, but then it goes beyond that, right? So the next step is, are we, cognitively looking at inclusion? So are we sourcing from different schools and different educational backgrounds and people that are learning agile? Are we really looking beyond this tribe, more or less, that we've developed, so that we don't go too far into tribalism, but we kind of stay in the, you know, we really need to stay fresh, and it's going to take all perspectives. Inclusion is also looking at, you know, feedback, the having places for people to communicate and offer their feedback, be part of decision making. The open organizations are really good at having a set decision-making model to work from. So everybody knows this is our process. This is how we do it. You know, it's clear, it's out there. Which really helps then, right? If you're going to move into, say, fostering community, which is the next one, community really is just a group of people that say, we may not agree here, but what we do have is a core set of values that we all agree upon, and we have a common goal that we're working towards. And when we have a common goal we're working towards, it doesn't matter if we don't always see eye to eye. Like, we know we're working towards a common good. And then that's where that inclusivity piece comes in too. It's the ability to have better communication and being able to source all these different places to make it work, or different voices to make it work. Which then helps us with collaboration. Collaboration in open organizations really is, there's a lot of cross-functional collaboration, a lot of people that are trained more to be utility players, so that you're not, you may be a subject matter expert, but you also have been trained in some of the other things that would benefit you from sitting at the table with other people in your organization to solve problems for clients. Because at the end of the day, that's why we're all exist in our workplaces, to solve a problem for someone else. So the collaboration piece is really, really huge. And this is where I would tie back again saying, okay, inclusivity, it's, you know, everybody at the table is welcome, and we need all voices at the table to be heard. And we need to see all the different perspectives that are around the table to help us solve a problem. Because that's really where that ideation starts to take place, and where we're actively solving problems in new ways. And that's where that, from a culture of innovation, we start to see just totally gives rise to, how do we solve problems? Which, by the way, is just change. It's just new information, and we're solving the next problem, and so on. And then the other two are transparency and adaptability. We talked a little bit about transparency, that access to information and the ability to get to what you need to do your job. I remember, just as an example, people to relate to, about 5 years ago, I had a healthcare project I was on, and I was so frustrated because, you know, having a high bill rate as a consultant sometimes when you're on a project, which is great if you're just racking up billable hours, but when you really just want to get your work done for your client, and then to kind of like be stonewalled at every turn, like, okay, I need client A, I need this piece of information so that we can accomplish our task. Great, I don't handle that type of data, so you're going to have to go to that department to get the data. And it'd always be like, well, what do you mean I have to go through a whole nother set of systems, but you guys are like connected on the same platform? So, you know, I would just sit there and scratch my head, and days would go by while you're waiting on one piece of data to finish your task. And so that's really where transparency solves part of that issue. And instead of wasting time, and you know, morale goes down when you're, I don't know about you, but if I like have to keep hitting my head into the brick wall repeatedly to get an answer, or what feels like that, it's like your morale goes down. It's like, I'm not inspired to do my work. You know, like, let's keep the momentum going and stay engaged and keep our productivity up. Yeah. And then that last piece of adaptability is really what it is. It's just being in that constant state of flow where you're able to pivot when you need to. Where you're feeling free to release early and often, which is a software term, But I've started applying that to things I do. And at first people thought I was a little crazy. Like with the company, I went through a few iterations of how I felt about our website or what I thought about different taglines, a couple of years ago. And I'd put them out in front of people. I'd be like, tell me what you think, you know. In marketing, we call it A/B testing. But I just went all the way in. I just like make a whole website and I'd just swap out taglines every week to see what my responses were. But what that did is it helped me figure out what wasn't working for me, what wasn't right, what wasn't aligned, and then let me continue to test in the market how people were responding, what words worked and what didn't. And that's really adaptability at the core. And so open organizations understand that. And there's plenty of room for people to try. I don't like the word fail, but I think that we try and we learn from those lessons of what is aligned with us, what does work, what doesn't work. And when you have an open organization has the framework for all of that to take place and happen, and people just show up to work and do their job and they just solve problems and they work with their teams across the globe. And it's like, this doesn't mean that it doesn't come without its challenges. But it does make it a much more viable place for problems to be solved and change to happen.
Okay. Well, I've heard you mention a couple times that there's a framework, and I'm wondering, is this like a standard framework for open organizations, or is it you customize it based on the organization?
Yeah, I'll throw out my disclaimer. It's just a word I really like to use.
Okay.
But I get that question a lot, which I probably just should create a definition somewhere. Because people are like, well, what do you mean? But really, when I think about the framework, I think about kind of our organizational structures, the design of the way we organize for work. Maybe that's a better way of looking at the organization for work, because I think sometimes we can use, you know, an organizational structure or design. And some people will be like, well, but you know, we're a small business. We don't really need to think that big or that broad. Like maybe the connotation is it's this, you know, massive thing you have to figure out. But really, it's how are we organizing to work? And so when you look at that, it's really, you would address things like, what does your leadership model look like? There are some open organizations that still operate with a hierarchical org design, but most of them don't because they don't find it effective. So yes, there's an org structure in place and there's a group of people that are responsible at the end of the day for, you know, all of the bottom line related things and high level decision making. But mostly it becomes decentralizing, and it's having distributed leadership. It's putting the power back in the hands of the people that are on the front lines doing the work and these teams that are actively solving problems together. It looks like your processes, your policies, how are we governing the way that we work? How are we making decisions? And all of those things kind of, you know, prop up what I call a framework. It's just saying, these are the guardrails. These are the rules of the road. They're published everywhere. Everybody should understand them. If you don't, please ask a question. And okay. So that's kind of how I describe a framework.
Okay. So it sounds like there's a deliberate agreement and conversation around this is how we're going to operate together.
Yeah. It's something else I've learned in the software world. So one of the things that a lot of technologists will do if they're sitting down to like create even like not just the ideation process, but, you know, literally scoping out a new product, new solution, they'll start with a social contract. And so that's like at a team level saying, this is what we're going to do to govern ourselves over the course of the time we're meeting together. And it's just really about, honestly, it's about being present, being mindful of all the voices at the table, you know, making an agreement that I'm going to be present. So I'm not going to be on my laptop. I'm not going to be on my phone. When we're in this 3-hour ideation session, I'm all in, right? And then you can basically scale that back out when you look at it, how we organize for work. It's the same thing. It's, this is what we've come to, but now we all know. I personally feel like it gives a lot more of a sense of ownership back to the individual employee and leader to feel like I know where what I have to work within, and I'm staying within these guidelines that they've given, and I've agreed to that. And now I have a lot more of a sense of ownership because I can now be autonomous within the guardrails I've been given. And I think to me, that's when people like really tap into their core strengths and, you know, start innovating because they're in their own genius zone, offering, you know, the right types of skills back to the people at the table.
Okay, that makes sense. So this podcast is all about how do you influence change? And so, you know, what's the link here? How is it that open organizations, or what is it about open organizations that make them conducive or more conducive to change than, say, other organizations that aren't as open?
I think a few things. I think, again, if you look back at like those principles we've kind of covered, those are just core human capabilities. Often we used to call them soft skills, and I'm a big proponent in shifting that language because that implies a lot of gender bias and has over time. But if you really look at those things, they're core human capabilities, you know, communication, working with other people in a group and figuring out how to solve problems, you know, it's collaboration, it's sharing information with each other. It's all of these different factors really are the core human capabilities that we've kind of forgotten a little bit, or we've kind of taken it out of our work. We've taken it out in the sense that, you know, we've become very, in the last industry age, which we've now been for the last 10 years, maybe closer to 12 at this point, have been moving through an industry 4.0, but we were very focused on tasks. It was very rote behavior. You came in and eventually we worked our way to where we just put everybody in a cubicle. This is your job description. This is your role. Good luck. Go tick off the boxes. And there wasn't a lot of room to be human in that, right? And so now we've entered this age of emerging technologies where we have AI, we have machine learning, we have automation. And the beautiful thing in this, if you can find the beautiful in the age of AI, is it's taking all of the tasks away from us and giving an opportunity back for us to be human again, in the sense of our core ability to be creative and to be problem solvers. It's the stuff that machines can't replicate. And so I think the open organization models provide a space for that to come back online and happen. It allows us to increase our emotional intelligence. It allows us to be adaptable and roll with change as it comes and not be afraid of it. And it allows us to tap into that creative space, which is just problem solving. What I would like to see more of, not just from open organizations, but others across the board, is looking at learning agility, which is people's innate ability to take lessons learned from throughout the whole history of their life and their work life, but their regular life too, and applying that knowledge in a way that solves problems in a new way. So you may have an individual that is not specifically trained in X, Y, and Z. So they can't sit down at the table and say, well, I know how to do this. I've studied for 5 years on how to solve this type of problem in this methodology, and I have a certification. But you may have somebody come into a room that says, you know, I haven't done that certification, but kind of encountered something like this before. Let me pull that knowledge out of my toolbox and apply that same type of principle of what got me through before. How can I use that skill to this situation? And so that learning agility has it's much easier to foster in an open environment.
Makes sense. And so someone might be listening to this and saying, okay, these five principles sound great. So just to recap, they're inclusion, community, collaboration, transparency, and adaptability. And so someone might be thinking, that sounds really great and sounds nothing like my organization now. So if I wanted to do something like this, where would I even start?
Well, I'll start with the first thing I always tell clients is it's going to take some doing, but change is only as hard as you choose to make it. Once that's said, it does, you know, if you're looking at starting that throughout the whole of an organization, obviously you've got a lot of leadership and stakeholders that need to come to the table and say, who do we want to be? If we were standing as our future selves in 5 years or 10 years, what does that look like? Who do we want to be? And then kind of reverse engineer the process you need to do to get there. In terms of opening yourself up to become that type of environment, that culture, and ultimately that type of business partner. Now, for those that are sitting in closed organizations that are like, yeah, like that's going to happen anytime soon. and that's a fair point that a lot of people make. So it's like, well, what can I do from where I'm sitting? You know, maybe I lead a team or maybe I'm someone on a team, and what can we do? You know, we've got a lot of great people we work with, but we know we can't go right out and get our leadership or the stakeholders of the company to make a change. What you can do is start thinking about how can I apply these in my own team? So if you're a team leader, it's a great thing to say, I'm going to start leading open meetings. So how do I just change the way my meetings are being run? How do I start getting people to understand that we can communicate and have open dialogue without, you know, trash talking everybody at the table, or we're preventing somebody from having a voice? How do I start creating a trusted environment that's psychologically safe, and we all assume positive intent when we come to the table? So you can start that with a meeting. Then you can just start saying, generally speaking, I'm going to become a more open person. I'm going to give people the benefit of the doubt. We're all here working towards the same goal. So if I go into an interaction with a coworker with that understanding, then I can kind of dial that back a little bit within myself to feel like I have to be extra guarded or I have to be defensive. And just have a real communication with someone, real conversation. And I think that that's just the easiest way for people to say, where do I start? How do I start? Simple thing. How am I going to communicate with my coworkers? Team leader, how am I going to run meetings? And if you have an organization that wants to look at how do we change everything, then obviously that's a bigger context. But it's just simple things. How can I be more human?
Simple. I put in quotes.
Simple, right? Right, yeah. Yes.
Well, so you
brought up italics.
You brought up this example of an open meeting, and so I'm just curious. You know, how do you do that? How do you have that conversation with a group? Do you actually just say, "Hey, I heard about this concept called open meetings. Let's talk about what that might look like," or, you know, how does that conversation start?
Yeah, absolutely. We can give everybody a link at the end, but some of my community members in the open organization and ambassadors have actually written great articles on this, what it looks like, how to get started, lessons learned, and exercises and resources that anybody could grab up and start using today. So we'll make sure that we get you a link for that. But I would recommend somebody that wants to start that way, you know, you just like announce to your team, hey, we're going to try this. This is what it looks like. We're probably going to hit a few, you know, speed bumps the first couple of times until we're all comfortable. We understand what this looks like, and then go with it. And in fact, that's probably the best example of being open from day one, is just saying, I'm going to be transparent. We're going to give it a shot. It might not work, and we're going to have to tweak it to this particular group, but this is what it looks like. And another thing that you could even do with that is, once you've explained what's going to happen, is you can create an open document for your agenda. This is something our ambassador group does every month. So we meet monthly. There are 12 of us roughly that sit all over the globe, and we meet to help drive this conversation and provide thought leadership and structure to the conversation at large on open organizations. And we have a Google document that's open to everybody on the team. And then our, I kind of call him our chief cat herder, but our editor and organizer for our community will put the outline for the agenda in, and he leaves blank spaces for each individual's name for their update. And then so as we're going, we all have access to that document to see what the agenda is. We can post our links or our updates, things that need to be discussed in the meeting. And then that also gives people an opportunity before walking in the room to understand what's going on, wrap their head around it. Is there anything they needed to prepare? It also kind of takes that burden off of people. You know, I remember a few corporate meetings where I would go sit in the room with my peers and our collective manager, and you'd go in for the monthly meeting, and I just would feel sheer terror, because it's like, I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, what's coming down the pipe now, and what's going to be said? And if you know, even if you look at it 10 minutes in advance, you're like, cool, I know where we're going. We're going to discuss these things. I can wrap my head around it, and I know how to fit in and where I want to share my voice. So those are just some simple things that, again, simple air quotes italics, but it's a really good starting point for people to not feel like you have to reinvent your entire wheel but you can start in one simple place.
Okay. Well, where can listeners find the resources that you mentioned and learn more about open organizations?
So probably the most simplest way to go is if you go to our website, which is leader21.com, which is LDR21.com/resources. And I have a whole organized page for you to click on all kinds of different links. You can go straight to opensource.com/open-organization. The cool thing is with open source and this collaborative community, these are all free resources that people can get their hands on. We have a whole book series. I think we're up to book 6 or 7. We just released one in the community last week, which is focused on open education. How do we redo the way we're doing classrooms, both higher ed and all the way through what we would call K-12 in North America. And it's looking at opening that up so we can really tap into changing the system itself, which is a little bit broken. I say a little bit to be kind because it's a lot broken. but these are like tangible resources. So you have access to books. We have a maturity model on what those principles look like at an operational level, and just tons of other things. We have a really cool workbook we published a year ago, which is every chapter comes with an exercise that you can use with your teams right away. And they are based a little bit from a technology standpoint, but also not. So you'll be able, as a leader, project leader, I use the term leader, anybody that is working with people will be able to take advantage of it.
Great. Well, thanks so much for pointing us to all those resources. And thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to the Influence Change at Work show. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events, please visit inclaria.com. While you're there, be sure to download the free Change Readiness Assessment to find out if your change initiative is set up for success. Until next time, best wishes on your change initiative.